Bonnie Gani, everyone. It's Professor Amin Ra, along with Joe Hembrick of Conscious Corner, and we're going to have a brief discussion on critical issues facing Black people this evening. Our guest, Ms. Linda Shorter, is on the road, and she had to go to a convention with her family, and she couldn't make it back. But we want to just have a brief discussion on some, you know, controversial issues, along with the guests. We want to thank Mashinda for showing up and Brother Rasha Key for being here. And we're just going to discuss some issues. You know, there's a number of concerns we have as African people. And one of the most critical things is, should we participate in armed struggle? Malcolm called it self-defense by any means necessary. If someone come to hurt you, you hurt them back. Martin Luther King, a Christian minister, dealt with nonviolence as a tool and a weapon to achieve our goals. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but one was for civil rights and one was for human rights. And then at the same time, we've had other brothers and sisters throughout our history that have picked up armed struggle. And one of the people was Asata Shakur. Asata Shakur, Joanne Chesworth, is in Cuba right now. She's been in there for good since the 77, 78. She broke out of prison. She didn't break out of prison. Her brothers then broke her out of prison there. It was on the Virginia Turnpike, and they had a shootout with the police there. I think one of her brothers was killed, and they killed a couple police. And anyway, they convicted her and sent her to prison. And when she went to prison, the brothers got the paperwork that it takes to make a transfer. They walked into the prison, presented the paperwork as if they was transferring her to another prison, and they got her out of prison and took her to Cuba. She got to Cuba, and Cuba has gave her political asylum for, you know, many years, over 30 years, and she's a legend in the Black nationalist movement. She was a part of the Black Liberation Army, a very serious organization out of the 60s that robbed armored trucks, and they were fighting racism and capitalism and all the isms, and her and Eldridge Cleaver was supposed to have been the ones that put that together. Some say she's a relative to Tupac Overture. But at the same time, America has one of their conditions that to work with Cuba is that they have to turn her over, and Cuba has refused to do that. There's about 90 people in Cuba who have been to Cuba. Some have made the transition. And they, they got $2 million reward for, and we used to have a sign saying, "Asata's welcome here," and, you know, in our houses back in the 70s. In other words, that if she came to our house, we would hide her out. So anyway, I wanted to find out if any of you ever heard of Asata. And what's your position? Should Cuba give her up? Or should, we commend Cuba for taking a hardline position and in supporting Black political leaders who were victims of COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program that Edgar J. Hoover started. But we're going to start. Mashinda, have you ever heard of Asata Shakur?
Yes, I have heard of Asata Shakur, and, you know, kind of what you briefed on her, that's pretty much you know, where it stops with me as far as, you know, what I know about her. I know she was in Cuba, been in Cuba, and I know they're still trying to get her over here. You know, there's a lot of different legislators or, you know, certain folks in the world that's still trying to get her to come back to the United States, you know, or trying to get Cuba to turn her over. But, you know, I know they got a couple $1 million on her, you know, a lot of money on her head, you know, so if somebody turn her in or that kind of thing, just, you know, so at the end of the day, though, but yeah, it was just during those times, man, where people were fighting for liberation, you know, and she was one of them. And, you know, it was a war, you know, it's still a war, but, you know, I don't know any more about her other than what you kind of spelled out. I heard that. And, you know, so that's all I have right now.
Well, a lot of us raise money and send it to your relatives to get to her while she was in Cuba during the 70s. And a lot of us, you know, prayed and hoped that she would, that Cuba would never give her up. And that, you know, most people felt that she was the charges that she was found guilty with trumped up charges because she didn't kill the policeman. And, but they convicted her of that. And, you know, it's a struggle, but it galvanized many Black women in the 70s, as, you know, rape made them more race conscious, more culturally conscious, and that, you know, for a sister to be able to get out of prison and go live another life in Cuba. Now, Cuba is not, you know, a picnic, but Joe, you remember Jerry Jabal, who worked for the school district. He wrote the book
Black Truth.
He sees her all the time. You know, he's been living over in Cuba for about 20 years, and he still lives there. You know, most people have to leave. And like, you can't be a citizen. You have to leave every 3 months and then come back. That's the type of system, but Asada don't have to do that. But Joe, what's your understanding of Asada Shakur?
I never heard of her until this evening.
Okay.
I commend her. And as far as, you know, warfare, I've mentioned many times, you know, we need a Mau Mau revolution. And I love Cuba. I remember back in the day when stuff was going on in Angola, and Castro was the only one who sent troops over there, you know, to help the Africans out. So I don't understand why all African people don't support Cuba, because they definitely support us around the world. So I think it's time for that. And I love the fact of what they were doing. That reminds me of the movie Spook the Set by the Door, you know, with what they were doing, like robbing armored cars and that sort of thing. You know, we have to be cognizant of, you know, Negroes being around, house Negroes trying to collect, like on that movie Queen and Slim, they almost got to Cuba and brother turned them in for the money, and then the show with him sitting up there counting the money, you know. So we need to be doing things, like I say, undercover and not being broadcast. So yeah, I'm down with all that.
Okay. Brother Rossi Key, did you ever hear outside of Shakur?
Yes, I have. Yeah, and definitely support Cuba for sticking with their guns to keep her and not turn her over. So, yeah, most definitely I heard of
it. Yeah, well, she, you know, it was about close to 80 other people that had fled to Cuba and got political asylum. So it's not just her, and we do commend Cuba for that. Cuba do have race issues over there, and Cuba, you know, has some contradictions sometimes, but the most important thing is that they stood up to America and they're just 90 miles off the coast of Florida, and you have some conservative Cubans. Those are the Hispanics that are voting for Trump, and they're very Republican. They are the ones that were part of the Bay of Pigs, and they were when Kennedy went to assassinate Castro, and they were, you know, they look at themselves as white, you know, in certain parts of Florida. You know, they got Cuba Town, and they, you know, they support America to overthrow the socialist government of Cuba. My partner, Saad Jabal, he says, you know, there, everything is real cheap. People don't need cars. People don't need a lot of things. And they got one of the best medical system out. Everybody can go to school. Everybody can go to get, everybody got health care. So, you know, they run a socialist system around the coast of America. And America have a blockade and tries to stop supplies and just harass them because they won't submit to democracy of America, and they won't come under the thumb of America. You know, they want to be themselves and want to live their own life. And America don't want people to see a country that is successful under a socialist regime, because they want capitalism. And so therefore they fight hard against it. Another example of struggle and victorious attitude is the Deacons for Defense under Robert Williams out of the South. He believed in armed struggle. And him and his wife came to the Culture Center back in the early 60s. I mean, mid-60s and 70s. And he was one of the Deacons for Defense, Robert Franklin Williams, and a strong brother. But, you know, he helped integrate a number of the swimming pool, the movies and things as president of the NAACP. But at the same time, he became a part of the movement and fighting the Ku Klux Klan. And he said that, you know, you got to be able to defend yourself and advocate Black people to get their guns and get and train and be ready if they come to lynch you at night, light them up. And they did all those type of things. And so we deeply appreciate his example. I don't know how many of you ever heard of Robert Williams. You know, but, you know, and he's just one of the Southern heroes or the Deacons of Defense. And at the same time, that advocated armed struggle in the midst of the civil rights movement and things of this nature, as, you know, a very courageous brother, you know, and a very strong brother. You know, he also went to Cuba for a little while. And then a couple of other places, and you know. But at the same time, we must. But you see, what the issue is America want to control our historical narrative. They don't want us to have heroes and heroines that fought against them, armed struggled against them, and were victorious. And, you know, they put a bounty on Robert Williams. He had to retreat and keep him up off him. They put an FBI reward out for him and all of that. But at the same time, you know, like he was born really when Carter G. Woodson was starting Black History Month in February. So, you know, he was a very brave brother to stand up in the 60s and talk armed struggle. And, you know, they put all type of bounties on him as well. Cindy, you ever hear Robert Williams? Are you still there, Miss Cindy?
All right. Stepped
you okay, Brother Joe, you ever hear Robert Williams?
Not the name specifically. I have heard of the Deacons of the Fence, though. I've heard of them. And let me just give a little background on Cuba. You know, as long as the American gangsters, you know, was running Cuba, America loved it. That was their little haven, like their little Las Vegas and all of that back in the day before, you know, Castro and them, you know, overthrew that, you know, government and got all the gangsters out of there and whatnot. So, you know, America always holds a grudge against anybody that has beaten, you know, European folks in combat. And Cuba was one of them. Haiti's another. Japan is another, you know, from kicking Russia's butt. They didn't like that about Vietnam, with, you know, because the Vietnamese whipped the French. So anytime a nation of color, you know, whoops on a European, you know, they will hold that grudge for hundreds of years, you know, until it becomes, you know, advantageous for America to make some money off it or establish a strategic position there and that sort of thing. So, you know, I'm very proud of all these places that have stood up against those forces, you know, here and there over the years.
But Joe, did you ever hear of COINTELPRO?
The counterintelligence program, Hoover?
Yeah. What's your sense of that?
Well, you know, I really studied the King Alpha plan, you know, a little more. You know, they got a plan for us. So, you know, from being an old coach, you know, I got to have a plan for the opponent also. So, but yeah, they, if I understand you correctly, you're talking about the, what the government plan to do. If you stand up against them, they're going to discredit you, assassinate you, or exile you. Is that the plan you're talking about, Brother Rob?
Yeah, well, COINTELPRO is counterintelligence. It started in 19. Well, the national open program that the FBI publicly announced, they've always had a COINTELPRO, neutralize black leaders and organizations, right, infiltrate them and neutralize them, right, using some black people and using by any means necessary. But that's what they call counterintelligence program. It's a military term, really. You know, turn the people against them with propaganda and false information about them, character assassination.
I got you.
Yeah, go ahead.
And, you know, they... you know, some of the people that have been used, you know, had realized it later on in life, in particular, W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, when he was used against the Garvey movement. And then he wrote Garvey a letter after Garvey had been exiled, and he wrote him a letter apologizing for being used like that. And then he ended up leaving himself, going to Ghana and never coming back over here.
Tearing up his passport.
Yeah, so there's, but you know, I was studying something the other day about the sisters who was very instrumental in the, in terms of talking about the house Negro versus the field Negro.
Yeah.
A lot of the sisters in the house, they had the mentality of the brothers in the field, as far as, especially down in South America. Actually, it was the women. I was listening to this one sister. They were planning to have some brothers come up and kill the master, you know, before the rebellion started. And she told him, you don't have to worry about coming up here. I'll do that myself. You know, you guys handle what you got to handle out there. So there's a long history of sisters like that. I haven't got a whole lot of material on it. I just been listening to others and what they had to say about it. That's why I like to, but as far as the the counterintelligence program and all that, I think Garvey's plan that he had and his philosophy and opinions, that when you catch one of us doing that, their plan was not just to kill him or her, but their whole family. So when you know you got something like that in place, then you'll be less likely to end up being a turncoat, you know, against your own people if you know it's going to cost you the lives of your family members. So that's a good book to read, Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey. So,
yeah. And see, the issue, well, Brother Rasha Key, you ever hear of COINTELPRO?
Sir. Yep. Started back with Edgar Hoover, infiltrated that organization.
Neutralized.
That's when
they didn't want a black messiah that could galvanize and unify the black community. Go ahead, Rusty.
If you watch certain shows, you'll be able to get a lot of information. I know that was when he came on the scene, J. Edgar Hoover, when Garvey and them, or he started as a youngster infiltrating the Garvey movement. So just a lot of organizations they infiltrated.
But it's not just, see, a lot of people like to say COINTELPRO, and to a certain degree, they're right as far as them writing it down and making it a part of their law enforcement practice and with Edgar J. Hoover. But the practice of countering the intelligence people go all the way back to our first encountership with the European. Not letting us practice our culture, taking our names, giving us their names, and just over the years, and kids were born into it, and they raised them to think that that's what that it was natural for them to be enslaved. Now, not only that, but it wasn't just a federal government program; they did that locally, and they did that also to individuals, as you pointed out about turncoats and things of that nature. But because I know I've been a victim of COINTELPRO a number of times as far as my activism. And, you have to control your narrative. If you don't control your narrative, then they'll put out information to neutralize you as a leader and as an organizer and as an activist, that what you're doing is wrong, and that it's going to get a lot of people hurt, and that really there are some good white people, and all that, they don't focus on the systemic aspect of America. So you can find some good white people because the system is what they'll say is doing is the racist, not me. And they sometimes mix prejudice with racism. Racism is a system of government and culture and tradition, whereas prejudice is just a personal hatred, and some people say, oh, you're racist. Well, I mean, but they're saying that they hate you because of your race, but they're not racist because you mean to say, hey, go on about your business. And I hate you too, and things of that nature. But when they can affect your life, your livelihood, your freedom, your access to justice and opportunity, that's when you're talking about racism. Like I said in Natasha Harden at her case when we came out the courtroom. I said, murder is murder. You understand? It ain't racism. Murder ain't racism. Murder is murder. Racism is the judge that gave that lady probation after the jury found her guilty of a felon. That's racism. A white judge commuted her sentence to just probation and a fine for killing a girl over some orange juice unarmed. You know, and that's what we had to look at. Mashinda, you back yet? Okay.
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, sorry, I had some audio issues earlier, but yeah, I had heard of Robert Williams and Deacons and all that. But moving forward with so what was the question though?
We're talking about COINTELPRO now. But okay. If you have some, you know, Robert Williams was out the South, so but as Joe always say, as long as you south of the Canadian border, you south. But anyway, go ahead, Mashinda. We're talking about COINTELPRO, the FBI program out the 60s.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, that was just, you know, showing you it was, and it wasn't just Hoover, you know, the federal government itself totally, you know, gave him the autonomy and the rights to do whatever he wanted to do, you know, but, you know, he had a green light, you know, and so, the name of the game is, you know, I guess like I always refer to that in the Malcolm X movie, the one Spike Lee did when they were at the hospital checking on the brother. And then, you know, after the brother was checked on, you know, then Malcolm said, okay, let's roll. And then the cops, you know, I think the chief or whoever that the ones that cops, that's too much power for one man, you know. And so that's what, you know, it's always been a concern about, you know, that power. And so, of course, they had things in place to, you know, to knock that power down, kill it. You know, that was the whole goal. So, yeah, and then, of course, all the way down, not just federal government, but trickle down to local police departments and things like that. You know, I won't name names tonight, but I know people dear to me that was involved in shootouts with police and things like that, you know. You know, being part of certain organizations, you know, back in the, you know, late 60s, you know, around the Watts riots of 65 and past that through the early 70s, you know, dealing with a lot. So I'm just saying it trickled down. It was a, you know, an offensive against humanity. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to, you know, suppress and we're going to, you know, elevate ourselves. You know, that's what, you know, keep, you know, and they're lying to everybody. You know, we know that it's a small percentage of the population that controls, you know, they're like the puppeteers. And but so anyway, you know, these Signal Hill police departments and you know, the one, you know, the, you know, I could, you know, all the Los Angeles police departments, all those divisions, we can name those divisions and different, you know, a lot of the army, the guys that were the military, they seek out these police jobs, you know, because it's, you know, they like urban warfare, you know. So they've been preparing for all this, you know, at that time. And they're still, you know, they're still preparing for other things. And so anyway, it's good to know history, you know, to the best of your ability, so we can see what's going on now. You know, it's kind of like, you know, history, yesterday was history. You know, something could have started yesterday and we didn't know about it. Although it started yesterday, and that was history, but still, it's in motion. So we're reading about something that's still in play. That's all I'm saying. So that's my comments.
Well, you know, as Joe always teaches about history, you know, Europeans used to choose all our leaders. And a lot of them, they used the church, the ministers, to lead us, like what they would call Judas Goats. That would lead us up to slaughter, and they had an escape hatch for them, and we would get slaughtered. They would neutralize our people. You know, this is why you wonder why most of our black politicians don't take a position. You won't criticize Israel. You won't criticize America, you know, and talking about they want to help it be a better place. Well, first of all, it got to be better in order to help it be better, you know, and so they don't want people with a black agenda, you know, that's successful, like in building black Wall Streets and things of this nature. It's to their advantage to keep us weak. And so that's why it's important for us to know why we have the problems we have with regards to many of our parents followed, a lot of them didn't, but a good percentage of them followed Martin Luther King. Put this picture up next to Kennedy in the house, but would never put Malcolm's up. And I wouldn't put other black leaders that had a hardline black position, even black ministers that taught the gospel of black liberation versus the gospel of prosperity, and some concept that there is a God that sent his son to save us from ourselves, because we were all sinners. Why didn't God come himself? You know, I mean, God chose certain people, and Jewish people say they're the chosen people. And you know, you have to understand how they use religion as a weapon and a tool to oppress us and control our concept of life and after death. And they can control that. You know, if they can get you to believe that, they can get you to believe anything. But the COINTEL program is still operating, still neutralizing black leaders and black organizations. That's why many of our people are in churches, but they're not in community active organizations. And, you know, they'll participate in helping the homeless and feeding the hungry and all of those things, because it's safe. Even a lot of our historians, some of the greatest writers and historians, were not activists. They just told you history. It's up to you to do something with it. But if you find out, you know, you'll see that many of the great historians that wrote about our history didn't participate in struggle. Their participation was writing the history of the struggle and the history of us as a people. But as far as getting, being an activist scholar, many of them didn't do that. So we have to look at that. But controlling our narrative is very important as far as how we see life and how we understand life and how we understand the environment that we're in. And not just in America, but for black people everywhere, you know, that's very critical. All right, next is the what they call the DC snipers. Brother Muhammad and this young brother, they went around just shooting people, and it was also the Howard Johnson, a sniper who was in, I think, New Orleans, got on top of the Howard Johnson. And they used armed struggle, you know, from that standpoint. I just got fed up, you know, with the system, and just took it upon themselves to start assassinating people because of they felt the treatment of black people needed an armed resistance. So you look at the DC sniper attacks, you know, on the Beltway sniper attack. And they shot a couple black people also, but for the most part, John Allen Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo 17 was very crucial. They had this country terrorized for a little bit, just two of them. And, you know, they had cut out the back of a I think that Chevy Caprice, whatever, and would shoot, and they'd be gone. But most people don't talk about them. You know, when last time you had a conversation about, you know, the DC snipers from their mouth and from their perspective? Name me black reporters that went and interviewed them to get their position on why they were doing what they were doing before they were put down in many ways. So, you know, Machinda, you ever hear the DC snipers?
Yes, I sure have. I did hear about them years ago. That young dude was in the back of what, the trunk. They like cut out the trunk area or something, you know, like had a little, I'm not sure, but I remember they did some modifications to the car, like you said, and they were sniping. They were getting away with it because it was just the way it was designed. But, you know, I don't really remember. That's all I remember is I heard about
that. That's my point. That's my point. You just said my point. Most kids, you know, if we don't have organizations or people at home discussing our own struggle and how this system affected many of our people to the point that they would pick up arms and just start shooting white people, you know, and the system produced that because they were going around shooting black people, and so it was a situation that very few people discussed in their homes about. I'm not saying you have to turn them into heroes or heroines, but at least you have to give an understanding of why they were doing what they were doing. And this brother was an ex-Navy guy. And, you know, they both Robert Williams, Asada Shakur, they were committed and, you know, involved in the Black Panthers. And then they started their own activities. But we, you know, if you listen to the system, these were just cold-blooded murderers. They didn't have no cause. It wasn't about the politics of America or racism. It wasn't about the system driving them to this point. It was just that they just woke up in the morning and started doing it. Joe, did you ever hear the DC snipers?
Yes.
What's your opinion?
I followed that story. I know they had folks back on that part of the country, you know, petrified, you know, about what was going on.
And people scared to go to the gas station.
Yeah. I never did really hear their cause or justification for what they were doing. Like, they made some old jive movie about it, but I know once Hollywood get their hands on it, it ain't gonna be true. But you know, I was thinking the other day, you know, you brought up these church people and all of that, and the position of black people, let's just take here in America. And, you know, they so supposed to be Christ-like and all of that, and Allah-like and Jehovah-like. And, you know, we really have a tough position right now with our homeless population and our kids that are in the system. That's gonna have long-term effects on our people in terms of state of our race. And I was thinking of, you know, these people were so much like that book claims they should be. If all of them, or a majority of them, would take in a homeless person or a homeless family that was really trying to, you know, rise up. I ain't talking about those dope fiends, and there's some crazy mental issues out there. And then just one kid out of the system and train and teach them can really have a you know, down the road effect about us becoming conscious and coming out of our condition. But first we got to love what we see, you know, in that mirror that's looking back at us, you know. But they talk all that talk. I've got into it with a few relatives. They so holy roly and deacons and all of that. I asked them, you know, did he, you know, do they open up their church, you know, to the homeless people, you know, when weather's bad and what? They don't even do that. You know, like the book says, what does Jesus say? If a man needs your cloak, give him your coat too. I believe that's what it says, something to that effect. But, you know, they hoop and holler on Sunday and Monday, they right back to the same old sinful ways and ain't thinking about nobody but themselves. And I know I got off base with that, but that was on my mind to present, because ain't nobody going to save us from this but us. I was like what the brother said, I believe it was last week, when he was talking about the youth and the violence that the youth are committing. You know, ain't nobody coming to the rescue, you know, so we got to figure it out ourselves. Government ain't going to do it. Them entities in the sky ain't going to do it. We got to do it. So, you know, we need to start thinking like that and plan like that and, you know, get some ground root, you know, some grassroots, you know, boots on the ground doing something about some of this stuff. So anyway, that's my, you know, verbiage for this evening. I turn it back over to you, brother.
Well, you know, there are some churches that do those things. They do open up their doors. They do help people. There are some churches that are very, very progressive in their activism. Reverend Barber and the Poor People Movement. There was a Brother Wright, Obama's old minister, very critical and opened up their church. But the issue is, I understand what you're saying. There are abusers of religion, misusers of religion. But at the same time, it helps some people become morally grounded. It helps some of them be morally ethical toward their marriage, and have reverence for the dead with their funerals and things of that nature. So there are some. The problem is there's so many that are not doing that, that really, they're very conservative, the ministers. It's the gospel of prosperity. First of all, we used to do what Joe was talking about without religion. We used to take in relatives, called it extended families. In the South, you know, some person died, the auntie raised them or the uncle. They came and stayed with relatives. It was only as we became more Americanized that we began to shut our doors not only on the homeless and those that are in need, but even on our own families. Even though we had some rule that when you reach a certain age, you got to get up out of here. And you gotta go do something. You know, some went to the service, some went and got jobs, but they had labor jobs then. They don't have them right now. So you're 18, if you didn't get no technical training or no develop some academic skills to pass tests, it's hard to find a good job or some vocational education while you were gone. So I understand what you're saying, Joe, about the mythology and the abuse of neutralizing the Black movement and raising issues in the church that everyone know can't be true, but the people believe it. It's like people believe Trump, you know. They act like they believe him. They willing to die and go to prison for him. So that makes it real. But anyway, Rasha Key, you have any comments on that?
Well, yes. This is why we're here this evening.
because we definitely have to find some type of niche to help the you know, be a part of a humanistic type movement. Not only do Black people have to get it together, other nationalities do too. So, yeah, you identify these things that's going on with like COINTELPRO religion, and you learn from it. You learn from it, and you learn what to do and what not to do. You know, I have my reservations about religious people and all of that. You know, like you said, Professor Rod, you could do things and not be a person that confessed to be a Muslim or a Christian. You could just do it because you know it's the right thing to do. So yes, there's a lot of work to be done.
Well, you know, when Europeans know that they can control your belief system, wherever your head go, your butt go. And if they can control your mind, as Maulana say and other scholars say, if I can get you to accept my reality as your reality, then you know I don't have to worry about you anymore. You know, you see the world the way I want you to see it. Mind control. When Jim Jones took them people over to Guyana, most people, you know, want to know why would they go. They didn't see it as a mind control experiment. And even though they were supposed to do a public hearing to reveal all the facts that they found out about how those people went to Guyana, they never did. In fact, they ended up electing one of the people that got shot, the lady, to Congress. And she never brought out what really happened. Some they talking about they drank Kool-Aid, others were shot. They were bodies stacked on top of them. But, you know, as I was saying, you have to have the resources. And sometimes go to what they call the dark resource of people that wrote narratives and perspectives that are not out publicly, but they just got their facts and they got their proof. But as the question goes, how do you believe what your oppressor teaches you? I mean, that's a hell of a question. Can your oppressor be your teacher? Well, teaching you a vocation, that's one thing. But teaching you how to think, that's another thing. Teaching you math, that's one thing. But teaching you how to see the world from their point of view, that's another thing. And that's what happened. You look at every institution that they said it's corruption in. You know, from the police to the prosecutors to the judge, because it's the nature of these humans that run the country to abuse their power and benefit it for themselves. And sometimes they use it to help a Black person that they need or need services or give them some money and they'll do that. You know, for Kanye to go and talk about he loved Trump, what is that about? Jim Brown sitting up there in the meeting. You know, you say, Jim, what are you doing? But you have to raise these questions. All right. What about the Symbionese Army and the Senchu Rashiki? You know,
I'll pull it up.
Okay.
Well, say that again now.
Symbionese Army.
Oh, I think I have it right. That,
yeah.
Yes, here it is. Yeah.
Now, this was an integrated group to a certain degree. They called them SLA, and they were one of the most feared organizations. His brother, he called himself Sin Q after the brother that turned the enslavers of the ship around and mutiny and took it over and tried, he named himself after him. But the Symbionese Liberation Army, they were against racism, capitalism, and the abuse of power, all these killings and things of this nature. About around 73 or so, they kidnapped Patty Hearst. And they used her argument to say that brainwashing was possible. And when they went to court with Patty Hearst, Ethel Bailey was her attorney. And he tried to say she was brainwashed because they sexually abused her and kept her in captivity. She denounced her father, denounced America, and declared herself as Tanya and a member of the Symbionese Army. And she was a part of a bank robbery in Sacramento where a white lady got killed. And then at the same time, when they got to Sin Q and a couple of his followers, they burned them out and walked. They didn't weigh them out. They had to crush them. So they set the house on fire because they wouldn't come out the house and they had weapons. Well, instead of just waiting and, cutting off the power and starving them, and then they chose to burn them out. Now, my point is that the Symbionese Army was looked at. They made the Hearst family, who owned the Hearst Examiner newspaper, San Francisco Examiner newspaper, and they made him get some food trucks and gave out food. From that standpoint, she denounced her parents and became a part of the Symbionese Army. They assassinated this brother superintendent because of they considered him a Tom in Oakland. And they very, very, very much recognized by the community because of them giving food. I think a couple of them got caught shoplifting, went on a high-speed chase, and went into Watts, into the house. People say once they found out Patty Hearst wasn't in the house, that's another reason that they burned it down. But for people who never heard of them, they don't even discuss this in school, unless you're in a Black studies class. They don't want us to have heroes and heroines and let me get an example. Custer is still a hero in American history. Even though Sitting Bull beat him, since he was one of the top generals, but Sitting Bull tricked him in the Little Bighorn and beat him. They don't say Sitting Bull was a great strategist that out-strategized Custer. They say Custer's last stand and made him the hero. Even in Korea, when the Koreans ran MacArthur off, they don't talk about the greatness of the Korean army with less technology and weapons beat America. They say, MacArthur, I will return. They always put themselves as the center of victory even when they lose. And that's very important for you to see that why we have to control the history. That's why Malcolm said the most important thing you have to learn is how to think for yourself. All right, Joe, did you ever hear the Symbionese Army, Joe?
Oh, yeah. I was during my college days. I was at UCLA at the time, and I distinctly remember when it happened. They robbed some sporting goods store over in Inglewood. I guess they was getting weaponry and whatnot. But anyway, the movie Spook Set by the Door was showing at the Wilton over on Wilshire. And when the SLA kidnapped Patty Hearst, they banned it off the screen. And I don't think it ever came back to the screen to be seen with the movie. I think all Black people need to see, Spook Set by the Door. So anyway, yeah, I'm familiar with them. And I remember the old European girl, Christine Lund. That's where she made her mark. Because before they set the apartment building on fire, she was running up the steps with her microphone, interviewing a Sim Q and whatnot. And after that, she ended up being the biggest one in Channel 7 News after that episode. So yeah, I definitely remember that. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
They did burn them out, but they could have waited on them out. They just burned them out. Must have found out Patty Hearst wasn't up in there. But Randolph Hearst, he's right along with the rest of them, the Mellons, the Rockefellers, because all of the San Joaquin Valley just about was owned by the Japanese during the war. And they wanted that land. So he was part of the group that put out that yellow journalism about the Japanese was sending signals, out in the Pacific Ocean to the Japanese, getting everybody in a frenzy, which helped out, I believe that was Executive Order 1066.
Mm-hmm.
They made all the Japanese load up on trucks, and they only gave them 3 days to settle their affairs, and that's the same kind of plan they got for us around a holiday time with the King Alfred plan. They got a plan to get rid of us in 8 hours, because they know on holidays what we're doing. We all gathered up with our family, we're getting drunk, we're eating barbecue and kick back. And that's what it says, the time that they plan to pull it off, whenever they do try to pull it off. But these days and time is not really needed like they thought it was going to be needed back during the time we were striving, more so than we are now.
That's a good analysis. All right. Masinda, did you ever hear them?
Sure did. Yeah. Yeah, I remember I was young. I remember Sin Q, Patty Hearst, like Brother Hendrick was saying, William Randolph Hearst, big media mogul, I believe, so powerful family, so that brought on a lot of that highlighted the whole thing, so Patty Hearst is involved. And, a lot of people believe, of course she knew what she was doing, and as far as kidnapping and brainwashing, she was a rebel, probably checking out her pops, and how they operate, some folks, they flip, and she probably just flipped and joined and, got on and, of course that made it, that kind of exacerbated the problem, made it more serious. So they went after them with, vengeance. And reminded me of that group, The Move, over there in Philadelphia, who was blowing up neighborhoods. I remember it was that Richard Pryor, somebody was saying they burned down every, they said they burned down every house in the ghetto to get that, it was a very popular thing going on, but Sin Q was very intelligent, you know, from what I understand. And so, but yep, I do remember that. And in as just part of that, when we were talking about, you know, COINTELPRO, it's all connected.
It's a struggle. And see, that's, people don't, you know, like, that's the importance of us telling our history to our children about the unique struggles that we've had and our people waged so we get where we are today. They think that, you know, white folks just said, okay, y'all can do whatever you want to do. We love you and we sorry and we're going to make y'all whole again. And people think that Abraham Lincoln freed us. They don't think that Black people fought to get free. And that's the point of telling our narrative and dealing with those things. The reason I wanted to discuss armed struggle today, it was because the reason I want to discuss armed struggle, because most people were off, thought we didn't fight back. We fought back on the continent. We fought back on the boats. We fought back when we got here. And you're talking about the sisters with, that they had in the kitchen, they would grind the glass up so fine that they put it in the food, you know? And they say the house was on fire. A lot of sisters set that up with candles or whatever they had and left them burning. You'd be surprised at the resistance movement that we had. Now, I'm not advocating people just to go out and indiscriminately kill anybody, hurt anybody indiscriminately. But I am saying that we did resist the oppression of the system through by any means necessary. And that's important to develop the courage just to get involved and to think about others, as Joe was saying. You know, think about making life better for the future kids, your kids, your grandkids, and your neighbors' kids and grandkids. Struggle is a part of our history. Righteous struggle, righteous anger, not just angry because you're angry. You know, but righteous struggle. And there are religious groups that have helped people. I mean, in the Nation of Islam, I've seen them take cats with mental issues and dress them up and teach them. And they became more spiritual and they got rid of their drugs, they got rid of their mental illness, became ministers and became family men. You know, they helped a lot of people. You know, I don't think Malcolm would have stayed in a religion that would not help him be. And so, you know, that's the critical aspect of our lesson tonight. It's just to teach us that we did practice the love for each other. We did practice that, and we have to give young people examples. I had to teach my kids, don't fight Black people. But I had to stop. Don't argue with other Black people. You know, that was a part of our curriculum at home. If you have any problem, you come tell me and let me work them out. You know, you just go to school and learn and stay out of all conflict. Very few parents, my daddy told me if somebody messed with you, hit him in the head and run home. You know, and, I mean, but I told my kids just, hey, don't get in, de-escalate and get up out of there. So anyway, we want to thank everybody for coming. Rachki, you want to give us what's going on, and I'll tell you what's happening Monday. You're on mute, Rachki.
Yeah, I want to pull it up so I can hear it. Right. Here we go, folks. We have a guest called the Conductor coming on Wednesday. And he's going to talk about the cutthroat reality of true Black economics. So that should be interesting. I'm looking forward to that. And what about next week, Mr. Rob?
We got this sister named Anna Jahari Harris. She's going to be talking about self-care. She runs a self-care agency out of Atlanta. And she's going to be talking about, natural medicine and natural health and keeping yourself together on that level. And we're lucky to get, she has about 2 or 3 books out. And I'll get more information on her for the website, Rasha.
Okay. All right, so each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Good evening.
On the 25th, yeah. All right, bro.